Okay, so hello everybody. Welcome to the Love Hour podcast. I am your host, Miss Kev on stage, and I'm joined by my husband and co-host,
Christian Gray.
Hey, yes, yes, that's a good one. That was funny, and it reminded me of the introductions that they do on the radio. I haven't listened to the radio in a few years now, but when I used to listen to it, and Kid Fury would always like come in with like an introduction of as someone else, and then Crystal would have to guess. That's kind of what that reminded me of. If you don't listen to the radio, okay, disregard. Anyways, welcome to the Love Hour podcast, where we talk about life, love, the pursuit of happiness, and in February, the month of sex is all we talk about. And so we've had some fantastic guests this month. We've talked about what to expect during sex therapy. We've had an episode on trauma. We've had an episode on high desire women. And we are rounding out the month talking about kinks and fetishes. And we have none. Wendasha, what's your last name?
Jenkins Hall.
Okay. So we have Miss Wendasha Jenkins Hall.
Yeah.
Let's get a hand clap for her in our studio audience. To be clear, it's just me, Kevin, Joshua. So I'm really excited for this conversation because it is definitely going to take me out of my comfort zone. And by take me out, I mean like kick me out and then throw me down a flight of stairs. So before we kind of get into the episode, please introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about what you do and maybe even how you got into this work.
Okay, yeah, that'd be good. So, hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Wendasha Jenkins Hall.
Dr.
Come
Hall!
Come on here, and I call believe me in respecting...
Why don't doctors want to be called doctor?
No, I am absolutely... Do you prefer Dr. Jenkins Hall, Dr. Hall, Dr. Wendasha?
Or just Wendasha, or Wendoctor.
Never heard of that one before. That's the first one. Some people call me Dr. Wendasha. Some people call me Wendasha. It just all depends.
Okay, we're going with Dr. Wendasha.
Okay. So, yes, I am a sexual health researcher, educator, speaker, and consultant. And so my work has been based around Black female sexuality, particularly sexual health and wellness, also looking at the behavioral and social aspects of our sexuality. So why we behave the way we behave, why we do the things we do, and really looking at the history behind that. Nice. And just the social context behind that. And I have been in this field for the past 16 years. So I've been working in the sexual health field since I was 16 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, so just a little bit of time. And I actually started out in HIV/AIDS awareness, being from the South. HIV/AIDS has ravaged our communities, especially our Black communities. And so that's how I started in this field. When I was 16, I was a peer educator. I grew up in what I see now at the time in a sex positive household. I didn't even know that, considering that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So my mom grew up in a church. I was in church every single day, I feel like.
Me too.
But my mom did allow me to really explore that aspect of HIV/AIDS. And I was one of those kids who
Wait, what does that mean?
HIV/AIDS?
No. What does explore HIV/AIDS mean?
So basically when I was growing up, I had a few relatives who had HIV.
Oh.
And I lost an uncle to HIV and a couple of other relatives. And I really got interested in the topic. But it was something, of course, that was not talked about in the church. Mm-hmm. But my mom saw that it was important that I learned about HIV/AIDS, and she let me go forth and become trained as a peer educator in our hometown of Tallahassee, Florida. Shout out to Tallahassee.
Yeah, that's where T-Pain's from.
Yes.
Tallahassee Pain.
And it grew from there. So she allowed me to explore a lot more. She allowed me to really start looking at other aspects of sexuality, which I felt was interesting now that I look back on it at the time. So I was one of those kids who used to watch the History Channel, and they used to have this series called The History of Sex. And I used to watch it all the time. And my mom was like, okay, you just...
Oh, that's
go
awesome.
Go ahead and do what you
Shout
do.
Shout out to your mom.
Yes. And so I didn't know, realize at the time that was really being sex positive or sex positive of her. And she really answered all my questions. But it was interesting because, like I said, I grew up in a church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times in church, you're not having these.
It's sex negative.
Yeah, you're not having a lot of these conversations. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy that she allowed me to. So it just grew from there. And here I am today. Now I talk about fetishes and kinks. So I hope I'm making my mama proud.
I think that is awesome. Did you ever find that it was difficult to work in a field like this and reconcile, like, maybe your Christian morals and values? Did you ever feel that kind of tug of war?
At first,
push-pull. I just learned push-pull because we're working on some scripts and stuff, and it's a great word.
So, yeah, at first, it was hard. I kind of hit it a little bit. So my mom knew what I was doing. She always knew what I was doing, but I wasn't as forthcoming with it. Mm-hmm. So I would do my work, of course, being an academic. College campuses, that's what we're doing. We're studying it. I would go out and do workshops, and all of that was fun, but it really was not something that I was comfortable with sharing with my church family until I got a little older and I realized that they're very much interested in sex. Mm-hmm. They just don't talk about it. And what particularly hit home for me was when I had, I was quoted in O Magazine talking about masturbation.
What you talking?
What you say? What was the quote?
So basically talking about the benefits of masturbation, especially as we age, as women. So as we age, how it really helps our vaginas, right?
What it
really
do helps for us.
Because it is, as you get older, it is sort of like a you use it or you lose it, right? Mm-hmm. So as we get older, our estrogen tends to go down, our vaginas become drier, and you can experience some atrophy, so it can start to like close. And so if you continue to have sex or you continue to masturbate, you can keep the vagina supple. You can keep it, you know, open, and sex won't be as painful as you get older. So when my mom saw that happened, she shared it.
Oh, wow.
The church family.
The old church mother, like, this whole vagina been locked up since 84.
So, yeah, she took the magazine to church. Was like,
shout out to moms.
Hey, look, I was so
y'all shamed. Old coochies, that's what's wrong with y'all old coochies. Y'all dried up. That valley of dry bones.
The valley of dry bones was a great Christian bib. That was fantastic.
Goodness. No. So she shared. She was like, she was like, can you come down here one day and give a workshop? And I was like, okay, I guess.
Teaching the church how to masturbate?
No, not teaching the church. Oh. But you do have women ministries and they come together and they talk about these different things.
Snap.
And so I was like, one day I'll do that. I'll get up enough nerve to do that because I grew up in the church and they saw me when I was such a little girl. And it's like, I'm still trying to reconcile that.
I get that.
Yeah, that's difficult.
But it's been better. My mom shares a lot of things that I do now and a lot of conversations. My husband's family from the South also grew up in the church and they are... You know, they engage me a lot about what I talk about. So it's been easier. It's getting much, much easier.
You know, one thing that makes life a lot easier when you're talking about sex and masturbating is being able to do so on a very comfortable bed. As you guys know, we have a Purple mattress. It is the best because it was built by literal rocket scientists, and it has this very special material that keeps the air cool, which is also really important when you're having sex because sometimes it can get hot and heavy. Mm-hmm. And so you want to have the opportunity to stay fresh and cool and light. The Purple mattress will feel like nothing you've ever experienced because it uses brand new material that was developed by an actual rocket scientist. I said that. It's not like the memory foam you're used to. The Purple material feels very unique because it's both firm and soft at the same time, which is fantastic because in real life, I don't like firm or soft. It depends on the day. Like sometimes you want something firm, sometimes you want something soft. And so the fact that it can kind of merge those two worlds is everything. Right now, you can get a 100-night risk-free trial. If you're not fully satisfied, you can return your mattress for a full refund backed by a 10-year warranty, free shipping, and returns. You're going to love Purple. Right now, our listeners will get a free Purple pillow with the purchase of a mattress. That's in addition to the great deals they're offering site-wide. Just text HEART. That's H-E-A-R-T, to 84888. The only way to get the free pillow is to text HEART. That's H-E-A-R-T to 84888. One more time, HEART to 84888. Do not forget that message and data rates apply. I laughed at myself because there was a person in our life that read the word message but thought it was massage. Yeah, and it was really funny. So anyway, we want to jump right into the topic. Thank you so much for explaining all of that to us and giving us a background on everything that you do. I do think that like my generation in particular with like the purity movement it's kind of going back to the church and reframing, like recognizing the unintended harmful effects of that movement and kind of reshaping what it mean, what sexuality means in a Christian world. And so I think there's a lot of, you know, the church taking back sexuality that's happening, granted slowly, but I do think that that movement is starting to occur. And I think as we, the parents of today, are raising our children in sex positive environments, it will continue to shift. Did you have anything?
Okay. Yeah, I do think that it's true, because really growing up in the Christian church, you kind of feel like, especially when you become an adolescent or a teenager, that those sexual desires you may have, you're like, oh, that's Satan, or that's the devil trying to tempt you. But when you really get older, you think, well, we're born sexual beings, right? So we're born with our genitals that are able and capable of receiving pleasure.
Yeah.
So sexuality is something that is from birth to the tomb. So from the womb to the tomb, we are sexual people. And so I think that is one thing that a lot of conversations are starting to be had, like you said, in different spaces, especially in the Christian church, that we have to like reconcile that. It's not like we become adults and then all of a sudden we're sexual. No, these are just conversations that we have to have.
Good stuff. Okay, so I brought you on today to talk about kinks and fetishes, girl.
Not so churchy, huh?
Not so churchy at all. And in reality, there might be a lot of shame involved with people that maybe did grow up churchy and they do find themselves having a kink or a fetish, and they don't feel like they can explore fully that side of themselves. So before we get too deep into like all of that, can we go through some definitions, level set, so we're all on the same page.
Yes.
What is a kink? What is a fetish?
Okay. So we'll start with kink. So kink is really considered any sexual behavior that is outside of your typical vanilla sex or normative sexual behavior. So when we think of vanilla sex, you may think of, okay, your typical missionary, doggy style, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and that's done.
69.
69, it's so funny because now when we think of the word normal, that's a very subjective word.
Yeah.
So 69 can be kinky for some people, especially if they are just used to, you know, like I said, the missionary, P and, you say what?
P and V.
Yeah, P and V. Yeah, P and V or P and A.
Is A, is P and butt, is that normative anal? Or?
So it all depends. So if that can be normal to some people, or some people that is a.
Also, the scale is relative to you.
Yeah, so it's relative. So I don't like to really use normative sexual behavior, because normal is different for a lot of people. But so that's really what kink is. However, when we think about fetish, fetish is when a person has a strong sexual desire or attachment to an inanimate object or a body part that's not usually considered for sex. Right.
Got it.
And so typically they desire, or they want their object or their fetish object around, or they want to use it during sex. So they want to see it, taste it, smell it, feel it, all of those things during sex. Right. So every fetish is a kink, but every kink is not a fetish.
Got
right.
It.
So you can engage in kink behavior. So you may say, hey, tonight I want to be spanked. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that is something that you have to do
all the time
or you want to do that all the time. It can be a, hey, we're going to have a little special moment tonight. We're going to heat it up and we're going to involve some spanking or some whipped cream or whatever you like to bring.
Whipped cream.
But but that doesn't mean that you have to have that, you know, in order to get sexually aroused or to really be into sex.
Got it.
So when you are talking about, you know, kinks and fetishes, do you have conversations with couples or whomever about how they go through in a healthy way exploring those sides of their sexuality?
Yes. So there are several ways that you do that. But of course, I feel like it's important to first just have a conversation about it. It's not something that you just want to spring on somebody. You don't want to just get in the bed.
Hey, good morning. And then butthole plugs. I like it.
Well, that's true. So you don't want to get into the moment and then you're pulling out anal beads, especially if you all never engaged in anal. That's a very long that's very long.
This is a workout now.
Yeah, or you don't want to just pull out nipple clamps or handcuffs or just anything of that nature. Or you don't want to just have sex and all of a sudden start choking somebody And then it's like, no, we did not discuss that. So these are conversations that have to be had before you get to the bedroom.
So can you walk us through? I always love modeling. I'm a big proponent of modeling because I feel like most of us are like, I hear you have the conversation, but what do I actually say? Mm-hmm. So can you model like I am the kinky person? Mm-hmm. How do I approach this conversation with my partner?
Okay,
you're the kinky person.
It's like, no, you're the kinky person. Okay, so first, a lot of times couples do tend to share fantasies with each other, which I think is good. Well, some couples do, some couples don't. Mm-hmm. But if I'm the person with a particular kink, give me a kink. So say if I want to, be more like do bondage or so and have the handcuffs or the silk ties or whatnot. And I know that we have never experimented with that before. I'll come to you and be like, hey, babe, I've been thinking lately that I want to try out some bondage, right? And what that means is I just want to try out bringing some handcuffs into the bedroom or some silk ties. This is something that I really want to explore, something that really turns me on. I just want to know, what do you think about that? And so I would get your reaction to that, whether it is, hey, yeah, let's do it, or whoa, hold up. It just all depends on how they react to it. But then I would start to do a little bit more education around it. So talk to you about, okay, what is bondage? What happens when we have sex and we participate in that? What are some elements to it? It doesn't have to be handcuffs. It can be silk ties. It can be Japanese bondage tape. It can be different things.
I was in Japan. I ain't seen no bondage tape. What you talking about?
Bondage tapes are.
What's bondage tape?
So it's like a tape that sticks to itself. It's not, it's not.
As restrictive as like.
Yeah, makeup. So it's not like you take like serial killer masking tape or somebody like that. But so you can have those different elements and really offer options. Because when you do have a fetish or a kink, you have to start slowly when you're introducing it to a partner and you have to compromise. So your partner may say, hey, no, babe, I'm not into the handcuffs. You're like, well, how about I take some of your ties and tie you up and see how you feel about that? And then you can add elements like, so can we try the handcuffs next time? So it'll be conversations like that. It's not something that you should just say, hey, I think that we should try some bondage and tonight we're going to do it without considering your partner's comfort. Because that's really what is. You have to consider your partner's comfort and they have to consent without feeling like they're being forced into the situation. So, yeah.
Did you have something you want to say, Kev? So one thing that I actually thought was really good that you modeled for us was that you said, I would like to tie bondage, and what that means is. Because it is so easy for you to say, I imagine me, myself personally, Melissa Fredericks, I would like to try bondage, and my mind going way off the deep end as like your imagination take you
red
to
red ball in your mouth,
listen,
leather lace
yes
thing. And like our mind tends to go to the far
yeah
end
to
of
the
spectrum.
Farthest
yes.
ends of the far earth
end of the spectrum
yeah and so it's better if you're like, let me pull that in and tell you like exactly what that means to me.
Because actually in your when you said bondage, I didn't go to like silk ties and things. I went to dungeon sex slave room leather lace clamps.
So yes, basically BDSM. So bondage, domination, sadomasochism.
But
so
there's a lot.
But there's it runs the gamut. You don't have to be in a room like on 50 Shades of Grey, tied up to a plank, hanging from the ceiling fan, getting spanked. Like, no, that's not.
That's like
but
all
I feel
Madden
like
level.
Everybody's mind would go to that extreme, especially if the only image that you have of this is 50 Shades of Grey, for example.
Right.
And so you don't recognize, you know, there's levels to this.
Yes, it's levels.
And so it is so, even when you modeled it, if you could like pick it apart, I thought that was important, like kind of detailing specifically what this, like what I'm asking of you in this moment. So that way we're both on the same page.
Yes. And I think you have, even as a person who has the fetish or the kink, you need to engage in education yourself. So when you come to your partner, you can help in that education process with them.
Yeah.
So you have to really understand your kink. You have to understand your fetish and understand what you're asking of your partner so that when you come to them and your partner has questions, you can point them in the direction to help them make an informed decision on whether or not they want to participate in that kink or
fetish. So when you do that, what if they have like a completely adverse reaction and they're like, I'm not down with none of that? Like, what is the next step if the person is uncomfortable with even the like basic version of, mm-hmm. of what you asked for.
You have to respect that. You can't aww. Force.
Hello?
You can't. He said, aw. But, because you can't force your partner mm-hmm. to participate in an activity in which they don't feel comfortable. And how enjoyable would that sexual experience be if right. you know that you're forcing them into that and yeah. knowing that they're not comfortable with it. So you have to respect it and see if you could come up with some type of compromise. And that compromise can be asking them, what are some of their desires? What are some things that they would like to try? And then you can see, okay, well, I'm interested in that. So we can possibly try some mm-hmm. food or something like that, what they may be interested in, but you cannot force your partner.
So do you ever come back to it later? You know, if they're like, hey, I'm not comfortable with that. Is it like, okay, is that off the table forever?
Yeah. So yeah, you would ask your partner, is this something that, okay, we put a yellow light on and say, okay, let's think about it and consider it later. Or if they say completely red, no, I'm not doing that. Like I've met many people who like, I'm just totally against anal beads, anal sex. That's just not what I do. You just have to respect that.
Yeah.
And some people are like, well, let me do a little bit more research on it first.
Right.
Let me try to see how I can safely participate in this or make it something that's enjoyable for me. And then you just visit it at a later time.
I think mm-hmm. the color, the green, yellow, red is yes. so mm-hmm. important because some things that were red become yellow mm-hmm. and something that are yellow become green and something that were green become yellow or red.
Yeah.
And it just kind of shows that being in a healthy communicative or healthy relationship that has a lot of communication mm-hmm. is valuable in the bedroom and yes. outside of the bedroom. You yes. know what I mean? Because it's going to be hard to go to like anal beads or whatever your kink is if you're not having a good conversation. If you don't have mm-hmm. good conversations about, you know, other stuff. You know what I mean?
And it's important to know that things can go from green to red even during the act.
Mm.
So a person may say, yes, I'm down. But if you bring out the anal beads and then you get going to like, oh, nope, this is not something that feels good to me. You have to stop, right? You have to respect
in theory,
that.
It might have worked, but in practicality, it's
yes,
not.
Yes, yes. And yeah. that happens with some kinks where people may think, okay, this is something that can work for us. But once they get into the act, it's not something that they really want to do. So like one kink that a lot of people think that works for them is like threesomes. So that's, you know, a part of kinky sex. Some people yeah. think, oh, this is something that I want. But when they actually get into the process of planning that and really, because they should be planned.
That's
they should
funny.
Not be.
So Thursday at 8.
Yes, you have to plan and you okay. have to consider the person who you're bringing in and you have to get their consent, what they're comfortable. So it's a planning process that should take place when it comes to that. And then some people realize that, no, this is not something that we want to do.
Right, right.
One, it's not something that should be healthy for our relationship at this time. We can probably reconsider it.
I think that is so important and really good aspect to note mm-hmm. that even because it allows people, I would be the person that would be in the middle of something that I thought was good and be mm-hmm. like, oh my God, I don't know, but feel like I committed. And so you mm-hmm. have to go through with it. So giving people the freedom to even say and have that conversation, mm-hmm. you know, beforehand, this is a great podcast to have with your spouse. So you set the ground mm-hmm. rules between yes. you and I. Know that in the middle, if I say no, because I just couldn't do it, that I mean no, and I can't. You can't get mad at me,
right?
Because one of the things that we've talked about, even when Emily was here, was about safety,
yes,
in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And if I feel like your response would be adverse or negative, or you would get angry at me, that's not safe.
No,
it's not safe for me to speak up, mm-hmm. and that's not safe for my emotions to like mm-hmm. speak my mind. And how I feel. And so you have to set those parameters yes. ahead of time, especially when you're going through something as delicate as kinks and fetishes and that kind of thing, where somebody may be like, I don't really know how I feel about this, but I love you, so I'm willing to try it. But I need this to be a safe zone for us.
Yes. And if you're a person with the kink, even when you talk about feeling safe, it's always good to continually check in, even during the act, to make sure that your partner is comfortable, to make sure that this is something that still feels good to them, or if they want to try something new or try something different, and even engaging in some aftercare. So if this is your first time with the anal beads, I don't know why we're stuck on the anal beads, but it's just in
that's a good point to start.
Yes. So even after that act, after you've had sex, just checking in with your partner to make sure, like, was that okay? What did you like?
I don't know about anal beads. How do they work? What's the, like, pleasure You just stick them in and then be like, they up in there now?
You just stick them in. So first, when you come, there are different types of anal beads. You have some that are on a wand. I wish I could have, I should have brought some demos, but a wand, and then you have some that are actually like on a string.
Okay. Yeah.
Or you have your traditional butt plugs. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is you just always use lube, and you will lube up the bead, or you will lube up the butt plug, and then you will gently, you know, insert. And we always say that you should have anal beads or butt plugs with a flared edge, so that the end of the butt plug or whatnot should be bigger than your actual anus. So it stops, because your butt is like a vacuum. So if you put something up there,
like, hey, come on in,
it will suck it up.
Really?
And it can be hard to retrieve. And so you always want to make sure that you have like a pull loop or the flared edge, so it won't go up in your butt.
That was really good education.
Yeah, that a lot of people, and they have lots of lube. And also, even when it comes to that, there are levels to anal beads. So you can start small. So if a person's like, I'm not sure about this, I've never engaged in this, they have small anal beads, or they have small plugs. And then as a person gets more comfortable, they can get bigger.
So is there pleasure centers in your butt?
Some people do experience pleasure when it comes to anal sex. So especially some men or male bodies, because of the stroking of the prostate gland, it can be pleasurable to them. Some I've talked to some women, and they said that the penetration, because it's rubbing up against the wall of their vaginas, they feel like it brings pleasure, but it's to each his own. Some people find it pleasurable, some people don't. You just got to be safe to make sure you don't tear anything or nothing gets sucked up.
Get your butthole torn?
Yes, so friction, you know, because it doesn't naturally lubricate. So you have to have lots of lube so that you don't have any of that tearing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what else is really personable and something that you should consider, especially when you're talking about lube and anal beads. You should talk about grooming as well. And for some people, being nicely shaven is the way to go. And so even, and it's not just for women. It is for men as well.
Oh, shave them balls, bro.
Manscaped.
Oh, yeah. Lil Cam be getting faded, bro. I be tapering them up. I do designs. Sometimes I give the three lines and stuff.
It's a trimmer, right?
It's a trimmer, man. And the thing is, you want to make yourself presentable in the bedroom. And man, Bush is out. The president
but
and the
don't...
balls.
Yes, keep going.
I just think men, we should take the stigma out of grooming. Take the time to shave your head here. Make sure you're good. Make sure your beard's lined up. Make sure your balls are lined up, too.
Your balls should be lined up. The other thing I think, though, is that I don't think all men actually care as much as women do. And so this actually could be a gift, so to speak, that a man would give to his woman, to his wife.
Give your girl the gift of clean balls.
I do think that that's a gift.
Clean shaven balls are more attractive. Ask your partner. I said, Liz, what you think? She's like, I like it. I like it for much nicer. It's like putting a little tuxedo on your pee. You have to go to the prom. You can't. You got to get a haircut before you go out. You wouldn't go out with your hair unkempt? Come on. You want her to suck on it.
Hello?
Make it presentable.
These are facts, though. Okay, so we're going to tell you about my Manscaped. The engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and amped improved Lawn Mower 3.0. This third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents, because you know that skin down there is very sensitive and you can cut yourself very easily. Millions of balls are about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology.
Millions of balls.
Listen, Manscaped, you couldn't have sponsored a better episode. One of the coolest features is the LED light, which illuminates grooming areas for a closer, more precise trim. This is actually really cool. I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to make the comparison, but follow me. I just bought a brand new vacuum cleaner that has an LED light. And the reason why it's important is because it allows you to see all of the dirt that the naked eye can't normally see. So what this LED does is allow you to see everything that you missed. So you get a nice, clean, nick-free shaved balls area. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code LOVEHOUR at manscaped.com. Get 20% off plus free shipping. That's a fantastic deal with the code Love Hour at manscaped.com. That's 20% off, free shipping, manscaped.com. Use promo code Love Hour. Listen, we've talked about balls, we've talked about your mattress, and now we want to talk about your sheets. So make sure you also are getting feathery soft sheets using Etitude. Kevin and I have the Etitude sheets. We have the black ones. I'm actually going to go on there probably this weekend to buy some white ones, because I think there is nothing like a fresh, grown up, hotel looking pair of white sheets. Don't at me. That's just my personal preference. I think it's clean and nice. And having a nice, fresh linen on your bed that smells like it just came out of the washer is such a grown woman thing, okay? Why not try Etitude? These amazing sheets have a 30-day risk-free trial. If you're not fully satisfied, you can return your sheets for a full refund. They even cover shipping on returns. Etitude is bedding for the educated, conscious consumer. It's 100% organic bamboo, made with a non-toxic manufacturing process, and it's hypoallergenic. We're going to stop there. Etitude sheets, they're soft as silk, breathable as linen, but the price of cotton. And they're really soft, and like I said that, but they are really, really soft. You're going to love them. When you support our sponsors, you also support the show. And right now, our listeners get 20% off their first sheet set and free shipping. Just text OUR. That's HOUR to 64,000. The only way to get 20% off your Etitude sheets and free shipping is to text OUR. That's HOUR to 64,000. All right. These ads have been fun today. All right. So we've talked about kinks. We've talked about fetishes. We've talked about modeling the behaviors or modeling the conversation. Can we talk about the receiving party?
Okay.
So the person that would hear, I'm into kinks. So they're the person receiving that information from their partner or their spouse. How can we, that person, be more open to having this? Like, what are things that we should challenge about ourselves in order to not be like, "Ooh, child, heck no." And what is wrong with you? Go lay on the altar.
lay your fetishes at the altar. Okay. So I feel like it all, before it even gets to this point of a person introducing a fetish or a kink to you, they have to feel comfortable with you. So you have to have shown them that there is a level of intimacy, vulnerability that you all have with each other, that they even feel comfortable coming to you with that. Mm-hmm. Because there is inherently an element of rejection. Okay. So if you're a person on the receiving end, I think it's important for you to listen.
Okay.
Really take in what is being said, because we can have some visceral reactions. That's especially what I'm saying. If you're saying, "Hey, I want to hang you from the ceiling and smack you," or something like that. I'm not saying that a person would do that, but they could. So you have a visceral reaction to that. It's important to listen.
Okay.
It's important to reflect on what is being said, and it's also important to repeat back what you're hearing.
So what you're saying, you want to hang me and then smack me. Okay, now am I facing up? Am I down? Is the blood rushing to my head?
So when you're repeating back, that gives the opportunity for you to get more information and really understand where your partner is coming from. So that when you're having that back and forth dialogue, then you can start to make an informed decision, saying, "Okay, so this is what they're saying to me." And then you talk about, "Okay, so this is how I'm feeling in this moment. So this is how I'm feeling about what you're saying." And the conversation goes from there. And then also allow yourself time or the space to have a visceral reaction. Mm. And I think a lot of times people are like, "Well, I just have to be so come in the moment." I'm not saying blow up and cuss and fight the person, but say, "Okay, I need some time and space to really reflect and think about this." Because you have to understand that when you're asking people to do certain sexual acts, you don't know what type of trauma they've probably experienced. Mm. You don't know what type of associations they have with the act that you're asking them to do. So you have to allow yourself space and time to really process.
I think that that was a really great answer. I think that people would feel the need, especially like when you receive and consume a lot of information and you're like, okay, I don't want my spouse to feel bad. I don't want them to feel guilty. Like, I don't want them to feel shame. So I feel like I'm going to repress all my natural inclination, you know, in an attempt to make my spouse feel very comfortable. Yes. So saying like, allow yourself the space. And not necessarily do it in a bad way, like, heck no.
You ain't putting nothing. A what in my butt? But a what?
But saying like, okay, so that was a lot of information. I need like, let me just have a moment.
Yes.
So you can like kind of check yourself.
Yes, that's very important, especially growing up in the church, you always hear the marriage bed is undefiled.
What does that even mean?
That when...
that's our get out of jail free card. You could do anything in a marriage bed.
Yes, they tell you, especially if you're a woman, that you should not deny your husband any of their sexual pleasure. So, and your bodies become one. So my body is your body is my body. So we have those thoughts, and that a lot of times we feel that we have to say yes. Even though it's something that does not feel good to us. We have that like, well, my husband wants it, or my wife wants it, my partner wants it. I have to do it because we love each other, or I love them and I want them to be happy. But at the end of the day, if your partner truly cared about you and your feelings and how you feel in that moment, they would not be asking you to put yourself in an uncomfortable predicament. Or you should have the space to say, I am uncomfortable. This is not something I want to participate in. But we do kind of repress and be like, okay, I'm gonna try this. And then before you know it, we're engaging in an act that just does not feel inherently good to us.
Mm. One, something do you want to say?
Sex on periods. How do you...
Okay, let's talk about it.
I've heard, so in church, we were taught that that's unclean.
Yes, yes.
Do you subscribe to that notion?
No, I don't subscribe to that notion that is unclean, but that does not mean that I'm going to invalidate someone else who does subscribe to that.
Nice clarifier.
But personally, that's not my belief. I don't believe that it's unclean, because even in the Bible, if you're menstruating, you're not supposed to even go to church. You're not even supposed to be sleeping in the same house, you know, as your husband. So you...
See, we don't read the whole
thing. So, yeah, you have to read the whole thing. So, you have a lot of people who are menstruating who are going to church.
Yeah,
right?
They be preaching.
So, but we only talk about it when it comes to sex. So, I personally don't subscribe saying that, oh, it's dirty or it's unclean if you have period sex. It can actually be beneficial for some people when they have period sex, because
I heard it helps with cramps.
Yeah, it can help with cramps.
I'm going to take care of them cramps.
Endorphins. So, yeah, it can... relax. It can help relax you, you know, when you're feeling stressed. So there are some benefits to having period sex. But if you're a person who feels like that's something you don't want to do, then
you couldn't have the white sheets. You'd have to have the black ones.
I will always suggest that if you are averse to the sight of blood, probably lay down a dark color towel, or do it on some dark color sheets, or it sitting in the bathtub. Shower sex can be kind of dangerous depending on what you're doing. So
it can be dangerous.
You can slip and fall.
Oh, physically dangerous.
Like, yes, you can slip and fall.
I slip in the shower just being in there. But let's tell you.
Yeah, so just imagine when you have people trying to engage in sex and then something, you can slip and fall out the bathtub or out the shower.
Can you imagine dying like that? How'd he die? You know, we was in there period sexing. He done slipped out the tub, bust his head on the toilet. I love him. He went out doing what he loved, though.
Yes.
You know, looked just like himself. You know? You know what's interesting? So we talk about this on Righteous and Ratchet one time. We're talking about pegging. You're familiar, I'm sure. And we were talking about whether it's gay or not. Because in the black community, we're talking about it on Twitter. It was like, man, that's gay. Literally anything that's unnatural or outside of the realm of normal, I guess. I don't know how to say the right terms. But anyway, so in the Discord After Dark chat, we have a Discord After Dark chat on our Patreon. I turned my back on them for a second. When I came back, they was talking about the pegging. And I said, hey, what you talking? So if you're not familiar, pegging is when the woman does the sex to the man. And he is the butt and she is the woman. That's happening, but he's the receiving end.
Receptive anal sex.
Anal sex from a woman. Now.
Wait, fix it. Oh, I thought you had something you wanted to fix.
Me?
No, you.
Me?
Wendasha.
Oh, no. Yeah, Wendasha.
No, I was just saying receptive anal sex. That's just...
That's all pegging is.
Yeah, you're on the receiving end if you're a male. Yeah.
I'm not talking about pegging specifically. I don't think that anything that you do with your wife can be, I think homosexuality, unless I'm mistaken, is sexual acts done with a person of the same sex.
Okay.
I don't think that act with your person of the other sex is homosexual, or am I wrong?
So we're getting now into like sexual orientation and gender identity, things like that. So I will stop and say there's no such thing as a gay sexual position or a gay sexual activity or behavior, mm-hmm. right? So I don't believe in labeling something, oh, if you do this, then you're participating in homosexual or gay activity versus not. And then also there is a line that if you are having sex with a person of the same gender, that does not necessarily mean that you are gay. Right. So there's a, because sexuality is fluid. So you have bisexuality, you have other sexual orientations out there. But I don't think pegging in particular is something that is considered gay. And I don't think it should be. And also, if you're having sex with your partner, your wife, husband, spouse or whatnot, what you're doing together is what you're doing together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So why is it all of a sudden considered gay if, for example, your wife is doing the pegging, but if you were having anal sex with her, that's not considered gay? Like, what's the difference?
Oh, it's like, well, if it's two women, it's a threesome. If it's two men, it's a train.
Yeah,
it's a whole bunch of double standards.
It's patriarchy, it's sexism, it's all of these things that really trap us when it comes to our sexuality.
Yeah.
It really restricts us and our pleasure, right? Yeah. So, no, I don't think that a person who's being pegged is gay unless they identify as being gay.
Right.
So I don't. Yeah, but I understand why people think that way. But yeah. it's not gay at all.
That's a really kind of deep conversation. I'm going to steer us away from it intentionally.
Yes.
And the reason why is because people have very strong convictions.
Yes.
About what it means to be gay, what it means to be heterosexual, what it mm-hmm. means to be a man.
Yes.
Like those things have, and I have my own feelings, but I just feel like you can get in a whole heated presidential debate about topics like this. And so this is an intentional segue.
Yeah, it deserves something like a whole nother like episode because
I brought it up is because a lot of times as a man, I feel like there's certain things I can't enjoy, not pegging, relax, because as a man, you know, like if you know, the area between the balls and the butt,
the gooch,
mm-hmm. that little, just a little bit of come here, I'd be like, oh man, stop, let's do it a little mm-hmm. bit. No. You know what I mean? And there's so much of patriarchy, I feel like, is ingrained in you mm-hmm. that it robs you of enjoying sexuality
yes.
to its fullness because you're afraid of what someone might think that doesn't even know what you're doing in your bedroom at the time. Like, it's insane to me in some ways how much of other people's thoughts and fears and societal and religious ideas, all of that, create your sexual identity.
Yes. And even just other like random body parts like nipple play. Some men feel like, oh, I can't enjoy my nipples being touched because I'm a man, right? So it takes for someone to really unpack why they are feeling the way they're feeling about certain sexual activities. So why when someone's touching my nipples, this makes me feel uncomfortable. Or why when somebody is touching my gooch or when my partner's touching my gooch, I have a visceral reaction. Does it not feel good? Or it does feel good, but I just feel guilty about it. So where is this guilt coming from? Where is this shame coming from? Because you want to be shame-free in the bedroom in order to really have the best sex possible. And so when you bring a lot of these things into the bedroom, you're restricted.
Yeah.
And because a lot of times it causes us, or we need to unpack a lot of things, because some things that are trauma, we don't even know that we're carrying sexual trauma because of what we've been taught as children.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But we don't view it as trauma. We view it as, oh, that's just the way it's supposed to be, or that's just how I was taught. But we don't understand that that's really restricting us in our pleasure mm-hmm. and what we can really, you know, God created pleasure for us, right?
He did.
And so why can't we experience it in our fullness with the safety of our partners? But in order to get there, it's something that we just have to unpack and consciously be aware of.
That is the work in therapy.
Yes.
Is unpacking that. When we had one of the OBGYNs on, she was talking about when women, she's OB, so obviously she's seeing women come in and they have like issues with gynecologist. But anyways, when women have issues with their sexuality, the number one thing she does, like usually there's nothing wrong with them medically. Mm-hmm. She refers them to a sex therapist.
Yes.
Because a lot of it is those things that you're holding on in your mind mm-hmm. that prevent your body from responding,
yes.
you know, mm-hmm. erotically to something because you feel conflicted. There's an internal push-pull going on about, yes. you know, what you've been socialized to believe versus what you think you want or what mm-hmm. you may not want and what your partner wants. Like all of that causes, it's confusing.
Yes.
To be honest. And so you need to go to therapy to unpack all of that. The other thing that we want to, I keep saying the other thing and I'm about to stop saying it, but we're here now. The other thing that we need to unpack is dry skin. It is winter and a lot of us are out here with dry, ashy skin and you want to have glowy, dewy skin. And I know we know that's easy to do in the summer because sweat, but in the winter, you have to try a little bit harder to combat dry air conditions. So I want to tell you about Glossier. As you guys already know, I use this product. I use it this morning. Am I glowing, Joshua, on camera? Okay, good, because I used it this morning with their hyaluronic acid. What matters to you most when it comes to skincare? Is it quality of ingredients, effectiveness? Obviously, it's both of those things. You don't want to sacrifice one for the other. Glossier believes beauty starts with skin first, makeup second. This is a fact. I concur. Glossier, you have my stamp of approval. Start with your skin and then add the makeup. Glossier's top-selling Milky Jelly Cleanser is the perfect way to start your skincare routine. The pH balance formula has a blend of 5 skin conditioners. Dermatologists tested. It is hypoallergenic, non-irritating, cruelty, and paraben-free. It's tough on impurities, but gentle on your eyes and everywhere else. But it still feels like it's getting your skin clean, which is important because sometimes you try things that are, me personally, I try things and they're too gentle and I feel like, well, did this work?
Yeah.
Did this work at all? So it is gentle, but it does feel effective and like it's actually doing the job. Get that glowy, dewy skin for yourself by visiting glossier.com/podcast/love. Learn more and take the quiz to find your ultimate Glossier skincare routine. Plus, all of my new customers will get 10% off their first order. Go to glossier.com/podcast/love. Again, that's Glossier spelled glossier.com/podcast/love. Certain exclusions may apply. All right. So I think I want to round out this episode talking about, because you were talking about like what we believe and going on in our mind. So can you talk about specifically, I know you study like Black female sexuality, mm-hmm. how we as women are often socialized and how mm-hmm. that shows up in our world today?
Yes. So when we look at Black female sexuality, we have to think about it through a historical lens. And of course, that dates back to slavery, colonialism, and that could get really deep. However, when we think there are just different stereotypes we have when we think about Black women. So either you are the mammy, which means that you're asexual, you're the caregiver, you don't think about sex, nothing about you is sexualized. And you also have the stereotype of the Jezebel.
Yep.
So if you go to church, you know who Jezebel is. Mm-hmm. But if not, the Jezebel stereotype is that, okay, that you're overly sexual, mm-hmm. you're lewd, you're just beguiling, you just want sex all the time, mm-hmm. you trick and use your sexuality to get what you want.
Yeah.
And of course, when we have that stereotype, that's when we get into, okay, wow, we have, quote unquote, the Black baby mamas who having like the welfare mamas, the crack babies. And it gets really deep into that.
Yeah.
And it all starts with how we're socializing or how we're socialized around our sexuality. And so when we look at this, these images are all throughout our culture. So when you tend to see Black women in the media, there's some aspect of us that tends to be sexualized, right? So whether that means that we have to show more boob, have to show more butt or whatnot, that tends to be at the forefront a lot of times, our sexuality. Not to say that you can't be a sexual person and show boobs and butt and be empowered, because that is a thing too. However, we're talking about when it comes to the negative aspects of our sexuality. So what you tend to have when you have all these sexual images out there. You have some people who take the respectability route. So they're saying, I'm an upstanding Negro. I do not wear the short skirts. I do not listen to the rap music. I don't twerk. I don't do all of that because I want to appear respectable. I want people to respect me. I don't want them to see me for my sexuality. Right. So I'm not going to lead with that. Whatever I do when it comes to sex will be behind closed doors. And even when I do engage in sex there, it's not going to be some freaky, kinky, fetish type sex. I'm going to hold it together because I'm a lady. Right. It's really about being a lady, right? Yeah. So that respectability there. But then you have some who have reclaimed that sexuality. So why can't I go out and show my body? Why can't I go out and be the sexual being that I want to be since this is my body and I'm going to be liberated in my sexuality? You have those who respond to it that way, but it's still that fine line, right?
Right.
And what is considered a positive depiction of our sexuality versus a negative depiction of our sexuality. And when we're putting it out there, what message that we're sending. Yeah. It really is that complicated issue, that give and pull, because we see women like Beyonce, right, who are out there killing it, and she had her whole sexual awakening with her album, Beyonce. Mm-hmm. And then it's like we uphold her, and we have people like Meg Thee Stallion. It's like, yeah, that's great. But at the end of the day, in the back of our minds, we have this cognitive dissonance saying, well, do we want our daughters to do that? Or do we, or how does that look to white people? Really, when we're thinking about black sexuality, it's about
everything.
How does
that
look to white people in the white gaze? So are they going to think that I'm some fast tail, loose woman? Or are they going to see me as just being a person who's liberating my sexuality? So it really boils down to, it's just like a cognitive dissonance that I always say. It's just, I want to be this, I feel this way, but at the end of the day, how am I being viewed from the outside? And so some people deal better with that. Some people are like, I don't care what you say, I'm going to do me, I'm going to be sexual, this is who I am. While some people are like, I just don't know, I don't know how to reconcile it. So I hope I got around to you. I hope I got around to
Did
that.
You want
to
say add something, Kev?
Mm-mm.
How do you have recommendations for those people that are maybe struggling taking the respectability route, but maybe do want to embrace more of their sexuality, like reclaim some of that freedom?
So it really, because I used to be that person, respectable, and I know that sounds crazy, like doing what I do, but I always wanted to have this image of like, oh, I'm a upstanding person, even though I study sex, I'm not sexual, I'm not a, you know, we are fear being called a hoe, right? We fear that,
right?
And so what it really is really coming to yourself and asking, why do I feel the way that I feel about my sexuality? Who taught me that my sexuality is problematic? Who taught me that it's not okay to be a sexual person or to like the things that I want to like? And a lot of times that unpacking can be done. Some people journal, some people are able to come through that by reading and by engaging with other people, but some people need therapy. Some people have to go and sit down and have to have somebody help them work through that and unpack that. Because when it comes to respectability, especially like when we think about the church, you want to be upstanding. You want to live for the Lord. You want to run that race. However, I'm a single woman in the church and I want sex sometimes. Or I have these desires. So what can I do to reconcile that? A husband's not coming. Like, so we have those things that we...
Husband not coming, but I am.
Oh no. I sat down with a friend. And so it really comes down to really having a person or a therapist that can help you really unpack that. Because when we think about sexuality, that's years and years of messaging that we've received in the media, that we received in the church. And it's not something that we can just wake up overnight and be like, oh, you know what? I'm sexually liberated. I'm going to go out here and be my best sexual self and live my best life.
I wish it was that easy.
It's not that easy. And it comes up even when you're engaging in sexual relationships. Even when people sometimes get married, they still have that block. Like, I can't do this. Or it feels sinful to desire sex even though I'm with my partner. Like, I've met some people who are working through that. And so really therapy is a way to go. Also, if you are at a church that's more sex positive, I don't know any churches out there that really are truly, truly, truly sex positive. But really, if they have those resources to engage their members around healthy sexuality, there are some ministers who are out there doing that, especially those who have subscribed to like feminist and womanist ideologies that are really helping women understand who they are sexually and what that means to God. And right. And so it really is about coming and just really trying to understand who you are sexually and as a person. But there's no easy way to get there. No. I wish it was like, okay, I can just read this book and say a prayer and be done and I'm happy. And like, no, it's just like no real easy way to go about doing it.
And it's the work of a lifetime.
Yes.
It's the work of a lifetime. When I think about, I actually want to do a Melissa 2.0 update. And that's kind of my own, like you said, Beyonce coming into her own. I feel like that was kind of my own revelation and evolution. But something that you said that triggered my mind, and I think it's three things. I think it's education. Mm-hmm. I think it's therapy. And I think it's intentionality. Mm-hmm. And the unfortunate thing, though, is that trying to do all three of those things, even though I haven't done therapy, it's still on my list of things to do. It gets exhausting.
Yes.
And so you feel like you're constantly trying to fight against your natural disposition and like trying to work yourself to be better and do better. And I don't want to be like that. And sometimes you're just like, God, I just want to be.
Yes.
I don't want to always have to like struggle to like become this better version of myself. And so I'm at a point where I'm like, God, I'm just tired and I just don't want to do it anymore. And so I say all that to say that like I do think those are the three ingredients for anything in life that you're doing. No matter what you're doing, I think you need to be educated about it. I think you should go to therapy. And I also think on an everyday basis you have to be intentional, because you can't get lazy. You'll go back to your default position.
And even thinking about that and understanding that our sexuality is fluid and we change.
What does that mean?
Out our lifetime. Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you hear fluid a lot. And Kevin and I actually were watching this show last night on Netflix called
Love is Blind.
Love is Blind.
You was watching it?
Yes.
You see it? You saw it?
Oh, I have enjoyed it. You hear me? With Mr. Carlton.
Yes. And so we've been hearing, I feel like it's definitely.
He said I'm in love with hearts.
I'm in love with hearts. Okay.
I think definitely the idea of even gender fluidity and sexual fluidity, I think those are like buzzwords right now and not buzz in a. What'd you say?
Vaginal fluidity.
I don't think that necessarily like in a bad way. I just think that it's a word that's come up more and more and more.
Yes.
And I think it's important to always define. So what does that mean?
So when we think about being sexually fluid, that means that we are just not tied to one way of being when it comes to our sexuality. So we're not just saying, okay, me personally, I'm just saying, using myself as an example, I'm not just saying, okay, yes, I am a straight woman who only has sex or only has desire for men. If I'm a sexually fluid person, I can be like, well, as I allow myself to grow and experience more, that I am enabling myself to probably have more feelings towards a woman or a person who is gender non-conforming or non-binary, and I'm not holding myself to this heterosexual binary framework of sexuality. So that's really what it means to be sexually fluid. So you're just not limiting yourself to one way of being when it comes to your sexuality. And so when we're thinking about Carlton, I think it's his name, on Love is Blind. So that's what he was saying, that he said he's in love with hearts. So basically, I'm not going to define who he is because he has not put that label out there, but he may be a person who we may consider pansexual. So they don't see a gender. Like they don't see, okay, I'm attracted to men, or I'm attracted to women, or I'm attracted to non-binary, or they see the person for who they are, no matter what their gender orientation or the sexual orientation may be. But even though I think he said he's more so bisexual, I'm still trying to figure out what's going on like with Carlton and that whole situation. But yeah, so he is a sexually fluid person. Now, how he went about expressing that probably was not the best way. And it probably was the editing. And of course, in all situations, you should be forthcoming so that your partner can make informed decisions. But yeah, that's what it really means to be, you know, sexually fluid. So it doesn't just mean, I don't know what some people may think it means, but that's really what it is. You're not being confined to that box of I'm a heterosexual person or I'm just a gay man or a gay woman. You give yourself room and space to experience more than that.
I think I get that. But I think I want to be sometimes I feel like if you do define yourself as heterosexual, and then I'm going to come off this point because this can get deep and I purposely try not to do that. Actually, I'm not going to say it. Okay, moving on. I've decided to check myself. So I think we're ready to close out this episode. So
okay.
I always like, Kev, do you have any last questions? Okay, so I always like for my guests to...
How do you introduce it to the nips?
No, hot wax. Well, there are actual certain burning candles that you use when it comes to, yes.
Not regular candles?
No, so there are certain candles you use that tend to more so have different elements in them, like shea butter, coconut oil, and things like that, because they don't have as high of a temperature, like burning point. So you shouldn't be out here using a beeswax candle because it has to get so hot for it to melt.
Right.
So that means the wax is going to be very hot.
Yeah.
If you pour it on someone, you can get burns. But there are actual special candles for wax play that people use.
I think that that's an important point because what can happen is you fight your spouse to eventually decide to do this temperature play or whatever, but you haven't done your research to know don't use the candle that's on your tabletop.
Yeah.
And then your partner has third degree burns. And now they're saying, don't ever ask me
to do
about
again.
Nothing else ever again because I now have a scar on my body fooling with you and your foolishness. So I think that is because that's how it would be.
That's now, how see, it you be. Did your research. Now I got a scar fooling with your foolishness.
Exactly. So I think it's important that you educate yourself.
Yes.
You're going to enter into these things, whatever kinks, fetishes, whatever that looks like or means to you, that you do it in a way that's responsible and respectful so you don't come out of the other end in a whole entire fight with your spouse.
Yes.
Because it didn't end the way that you imagined it.
Yeah, so that's with anything. So like people who like, you know, choking during sex or breath play, there's a proper way you choke somebody.
Is everything called play?
Well, it's just
what are all the different plays? You talked about breath play, impact play. What's impact play?
So impact is when you're being spanked or struck. So
somebody be like, yo, just sock me in the chest.
I don't think that's okay because you'd probably hurt someone if you sock them in the chest. But people like to be flogged or spanked or paddled.
Kevin always likes to take it to the extreme. So you say impact play. Oh, so you wanted me to sock
you
in the
car?
I didn't say sucker punch somebody. Yeah. Like no, but that's. In a controlled environment. So temperature play, so wax play is a form of temperature play, so because you're playing with that heated element. Also, temperature play can be bringing in ice, right? Mm. And so placing that on the body. And when I say breath play, you're playing with the constriction of breath, right? So, but there's a proper way to do that, right? There are proper ways to go about doing these things so that people are not hurt in the process.
Yeah.
And that's
that takes
important.
A lot of... That's
trust
and making sure it's a safe space.
Yes, and then when you do it, like I say, that aftercare, saying like, how did this feel? What did you like? What you did not like? Is there something we could change? Do you not want to do this anymore? So those are also conversations.
That aftercare, I think, is a good...
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's important. Okay, anything else you wanted to add? We talked about a lot.
Yes, we talked about a lot. I don't think I have anything else to add, but I would just say... Just don't be afraid to explore something that you desire. If the person, so like I said, fetishes and kinks, there's nothing wrong with them as long as both partners are consenting and no one is being harmed, right? So you can't have a fetish that is going to bring harm to someone. So like what we call them paraphilias. So, you know, people probably heard like pedophilia and things like that. No, that's not okay, right? Yeah. Because that's bringing harm. Bestiality, if you're doing something with animals, that's bringing harm. But if a person is consenting and you both have discussed it and it's bringing pleasure, no harm. It's okay. It's okay if to go out and do that. It doesn't make you weird. It doesn't make you abnormal. It just means that you're just experiencing another aspect of your sexuality. It's a variation in sexuality. That's all.
Can I pull this back just one? I want to pull it back one step because I felt this and I'd be saying what I feel.
Okay.
And I think that it's important before anyone watching or listening goes to their partner and mm-hmm. is like, yo, listen to this episode because I have like some ideas. I think it is important to have a conversation first about the emotional safety yes. of mm-hmm. your bedroom.
Yes.
Please do not approach your spouse talking about kinks and fetishes and all the desires you want to do about constricting their breath if you haven't honored their desire to not be touched in a certain way.
Yes.
If you haven't honored their desire, what'd you say? Oh, I thought you said sorry. If you haven't honored their boundaries, if yes. you haven't honored their red lights and their yellow lights, like do not have mm-hmm. a conversation to push the envelope further mm-hmm. if you haven't already honored the boundaries that have been set. Yes. I think that's an unfair ask. And I don't think that you, the person, would recognize that that's putting your spouse, your partner, in an uncomfortable position yes. of trying to please you and they don't feel safe.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And also don't try to bring different kinks or things in it to spice up the bedroom if you're having other problems in your relationship too. Mm. So some people say, okay, I want to try to spice it up, or we are having like a moment or fighting, or we having some outside conflict, whatever that may be. And people try to use sex to fix things instead of really working on the problem at hand in their relationship, whether it be your finances or whether there's been some infidelity. People love to try to fix sometimes infidelity with sex, and that's just not how that works. So if you're having any of those outside issues, it's good to hold off on that. Like that should not even be a conversation that you should be having until you fix whatever issue that you're having. With your spouse and within your marriage.
Good stuff.
All right, so let's tell the people where they can find you online if they're interested in following you.
So you can follow me at The Sensible Sexpert on Instagram. Also, you can go to thesensiblesexpert.com. You can find me there. So that's where I will be hanging out at, you know. And I'm very accessible and responsive, so people email me all the time or DM me all the time, and I try to really answer and help out in many ways that I can. Yeah.
All right. I think that's it. Kevin, did you have any last words?
Nope.
You might want to take a nap.
I am tired. Yeah. I don't feel good, and I'm just...
All right. I think on that note, we're out of here. Thank you so much for joining us for today's Love Hour. Until the next time, bye.
Bye.